Oh, you're just so special. The white is so vibrant. It's snow white. It's perfect. You just look at a fish like that and you think, you know, you're just gorgeous.
Some of us are just fascinated by nature. Some of us become bushwalkers and orienteers. Some of us, biologists. And some of us draw nature closer and closer to ourselves, right into our backyards. Hello, my name's Anne Jones, and you're listening to Off Track on RN. Today, a pair, and their pets, koi. You know how you've had a goldfish or two? Well, these ones are whopping great carp of all sorts of amazing colours and iridescence. And this pair, the humans I'm talking about, are quite interested in koi. Kate McGill has literally written the book on koi keeping, and her husband, Ian Andrews, takes the photos. And they're turning their in-ground pool into a koi pond. And, in fact, the koi are responsible for their international love story. It was serendipity that brought them together, and it was serendipity that started the koi keeping hobby in Japan in the 19th century. Here's Kate.
Really, it's one of those occasions where serendipity, I think, played a very large part. Carp were kept by Japanese farmers as food fish. They were a very important part of the diet to provide really the only protein that these people had. And it just so happened that the farmers noticed minor mutations on their food fish, the interesting bits of colour here and there, and instead of eating them, they kept them and started crossing them, and they got more different colours, interesting colours. And some fish were transported from Niigata to the Tokyo show in 1918 and really caught on. They caught royalty's eye, and from that point onward the hobby was set to go, and it's continued ever since. As I say, there's a lot of chance happenings over the years, like the development of the first three-coloured fish, which is called Taisho Sankey. The only reason that particular variety survived in the early 1900s was that one of the sons of a breeder liked the ones with spots on. They've got black spots, Daddy. Can we keep them? And that was the origin of the Taisho Sankey. And I mean, now Sankey is one of the top three varieties in the world. One of the most highly prized fish. And that's how it started.
The hobby itself is worldwide. We belong to the Australian Koi Association and also the Koi Society of Australia. They're the two clubs in the New South Wales area where we are at the moment. The only other state that's allowed to legally keep koi is Western Australia, which is a bit unfortunate because the hobby has to survive underground in other states. The hobby does get a bit of a bad press from time to time because these fish, if they are released into the wild, can revert back to the common carp. And that in itself is something that we really, really try hard to restrict from happening, and indeed all our members are fully aware of their responsibility to safeguard the accidental release of these animals into the wild. And I'm a very keen trout fisherman as well, so I'm very aware of my responsibility to the rivers, and also wear another hat as a koi keeper. I'm very keen to make sure that these things are looked after correctly.
Those are very different hats.
They are. And you can't. You're a keen angler, and the other one, if you can appreciate the beauty of these fish. These fish are, the Japanese word for these is nishikigoi, and nishikigoi, to try and translate it, means living jewels. When you see these animals, there's every colour representative, with probably exception of purple. We've even got pale blues. So some of the different varieties have bling, what we call bling on them, but the word for that bling is kanjinrin, and that's the sparkly scales that you can see on this fish here. You might notice this bright yellow one here. It's an ogon, and it's quite a nice fish, actually, that one. In our recent show, it won variety champion, so meaning that it was the best of that particular variety. So
that fish isn't just yellow. The scales are a different colour yellow that almost make each scale look 3D. It is the most amazing, almost honeycomb texture.
That honeycomb texture you're looking at, there's a word for that, and it's called fucarin. And the higher the quality of the fucarin, it's hard to say it, never mind to explain it, but the fucarin gives that 3D effect, and what you're looking at is that honeycomb, and it's particularly evident on that particular variety, actually. So, good eyes.
How did you start in this hobby?
Again, probably by chance. Myself and my late husband in the UK in the 1970s, we were building a garden and we terraced it and ended up with insufficient soil to finish off. And we said, okay, well, instead of filling this in, let's build a pond. So we built a pond and we had goldfish and plants and things like that. And we just so happened one day to go visit Harewood House in Yorkshire. And would you believe it, they were having a koi show on. And they were keeping them in dustbins in those days, one fish to a black dustbin. And we thought, gosh, these are wonderful. So we went to a local place called Fish Lake, which was one of the only koi outlets available at the time. And we bought our very first two koi, one yellow ogon and one what's called an asagi, which is a blue koi with red on it. And that's where it all started. It was a long time ago. Then you find you need a filter, and then your pond's not big enough, and then you build another one. And it just continues from that point. Once you get these koi in your pond, you've had it, basically. Nothing else works.
There's a word for that. The word for that is called koi kishi.
And koi madness.
It means that you're koi crazy. You've got to be part crazy to do it, so, yeah.
You do.
Koi kishi. These two are in the middle of converting their pool into a huge koi pond. But in the meantime, they've got their more mature fish in a deep pond on the back patio, and it's heaving with colour. Ian Andrews.
You're looking at a 6 metre long rectangle in this case, and it is 2.5 metres wide, and it is just under 2 metres deep, and it holds approximately 30,000 litres, of which there's about 7,000 litres sitting in a filter. So the important thing with looking after Japanese koi is water quality. So we call ourselves more water caretakers than anything else. If the water is good, the fish will be good. This pond that we're looking at now, Kate and I built it, we dug it. We had professional concrete guys come in and spray it, so it's built like a swimming pool. The fish vary in size from about 150 mil up to 700 mil, which by international standards is below par. We tend to struggle in Australia with our fish. Japan and elsewhere, well, Japan is primarily the country that breeds the best fish in the world, and they've got their fish now up to the metre, the magic metre mark and beyond, and we're trying to do the same.
You know, when other species get giganticism happening, they suffer from, well, other problems, you know, their organs can't keep up with their size and things. Does that happen?
They tend to get skeletal problems if they grow too quickly, too fast. But when they're in the show ring as such, their body shape is incredibly important and structure of the animal is important. So they have to be straight. They have to be uniform in shape, and yes, they can suffer from problems, but generally speaking, the higher grade fish are perfect, really nice. So you can hear some fish in the background. They're all behaving themselves for us.
What does a misbehaving fish do?
Well, they can jump out, which is something we don't like to see, but the odd one in the years that I've had fish, I've had three jump out. You can put fences around and things like that to stop them doing it, but given the number of times it actually happens, it's we tend to not put up the fence, so to speak. So
this represents a large investment of time, but I imagine also money.
Money. The hobby in Australia is relatively expensive. There isn't big money in Australia in fish. Like I have heard of $2,000 and $5,000 for the really top fish. Elsewhere in the world, we know just recently in Japan, they sold two-year-old fish for $250,000 US dollars, so big money. And the hobby itself elsewhere in the world is to some degree dictated by the size of the wallet.
What's your water bill like?
Water's the cheap part about it. It's the electricity bill is the killer. Need to make sure our water quality is of a high standard by turning the water over every hour. To do that, this pond that we're looking at now, it's all gravity fed, but the water's going out of the pond, gravity into a filtration system, and there's three pumps pushing the water back. Admittedly, they're low voltage pumps, but the power bills become horrendous. As I said, they're running 24/7. We're running 80 watts of UV light to keep the algae out of the water and the water crystal clear. But the power bills is probably the biggest restriction to the hobby, and I don't know if the hobby's growing at all. I'm thinking it's stagnating to some degree, because most people, once they start to realise that they need to have pumps running 24/7 and there's a cost associated with that, probably is one of the negatives of the hobby, and not much we can do about it. And it's the same elsewhere in the world. Everyone's struggling with power bills. So, and we are too. So we buy a lot of candles and sit in the dark a lot now.
You're listening to Off Track on RN. I'm Anne Jones. Today we're in Kate and Ian's backyard in Sydney. This pair have spent a great deal of time creating the perfect environment for their beloved fish. They have koi in ponds and vats where they're attempting to breed grand champions. And actually, Kate is an international koi judge, and every year she jets off overseas to rank the competition-ready fish. She's always looking for the perfect specimen.
Your very first point is the structure of the fish. The same as a horse or a dog, there are specifications which say that the koi must be a certain shape, the fins and tail must be in proportion to the actual body size, and you learn to recognise that fairly early on. Although it's difficult to actually tell, say the length of the head is about would fit five times into the body, that kind of thing. There is a definite ratio of proportions to these fish. You then start to look at the basics of the actual skin itself. It needs to look bright, it needs to look very clean, and a very, very top quality koi will have a wonderful sheen to the skin. The colours should really glow, and the actual patterns themselves should be neatly arranged along the fish. Should be like a living work of art. You should be able to look at the koi and work your way along, and there's something interesting all the way to the tail.
This one here, the name is Nugget. And Nugget is a bit like finding a gold nugget, that's why we call it Nugget. But she actually won Grand Champion 2 years ago? Three.
Last year.
If you look at this koi, all the black on her has only come up gradually over the years. So if you can imagine that fish with grey underline, and now that black is just like black coal. And we have words for the various colours. We tend to talk in language like sumi for the black, shiro for the white, and he for the red. So they're the way we tend to describe our fish. We lost one of our grand champions and never actually spawned her. She actually died of age. And we made the rule that we were not going to lose the genetics of that particular fish. So we actually spawned her this year. And as a result of that, her body is slightly down. She's lost a little bit of condition from spawning. Spawning does take it out of them. But she's a bonza fish. I mean, she'll eat out of your hand. She is absolutely the alpha female in the pond. She pushes everything around, and yeah, and she's a real horse in the morning, pushing everybody out of the way to get at the food.
So, they do have an individual personality then.
I'd be foolish not to say that. I think yes, they do. There's definitely varieties here that will dominate.
Natural spawnings do occur if under certain conditions. When these fish were first introduced to this pond, we had a mass spawning simply because the water was completely different and brand new, and it basically set them off. But in general terms, they don't just spawn in the pond. It's unusual. What you have to do is select the koi you want to use as parents, and you actually transfer them to a container, a suitably sized container, usually 2,000 or 3,000 gallon container, hopefully with some filtration in it, and basically you leave them. One male, one female, sometimes one female, two, three males. It's a little bit hit and miss if you've never spawned the parents before. Their genetics are very, very complicated, and you can get a very large number of different varieties out of a parent that are apparently the same variety. This is because they have, in fact, hundreds of genes rather than our 46 chromosomes, I should say. And, you know, it's incredibly complex.
How intelligent are these fish?
They're not really what you'd call intelligent as such, but if you open the back door, they're there. I think it's called Pavlovian. They know their owners, and they know when you come out, they're highly likely to get some grub.
So when you throw in something that's a bit different, like a Chinese cabbage or something like that, is their response a feeding response or an interest response?
Usually an interest response, and sometimes they turn out to be not very keen, and sometimes they're very keen. Ian's just happily feeding them basil leaves at the moment, which they couldn't care less about.
No, they don't seem to be very keen on that,
do they?
Ian and Kate are nature lovers. I can tell by looking at Kate's face as she looks at the fish just how much joy they bring her. In their backyard, they're in the middle of constructing a sort of koi palace where they'll be able to observe the huge, colourful fish moving sleekly through the water and cater to their every pH need. Essentially, they're converting the in-ground pool into a koi pond, and it's a big job.
I forget the pain that I did building this pond, and that sort of tends to go, but we're in the middle of converting our swimming pool. Now, our swimming pool is 55,000 litres. It's a traditional backyard pool, and like most people, you tend to get to a stage where you're hardly ever using the swimming pool every year. I've excavated one complete side away from the swimming pool, and there's now 8 chambers as long as the swimming pool. If you can imagine, this pool itself is 55,000. The chambers probably will take up 20,000 litres. So we've completed the biological filtration. We're now at the stage where we've got to demolish a garden at the back of the pool to raise the swimming pool up to about 18 inches. We're coming up out of the ground. Primarily because we like to have the fish close to us. I don't want to be, as I'm getting older, bending down and on the ground to try and take these fish to shows. We should have it completed, and it will not look like a swimming pool. So it's going to look like a koi pond, not like a swimming pool converted either.
I mean, your backyard is quite idyllic as it stands. Mm. When this is all done, it's going to be an oasis.
We do get pats on the back by friends that a garden looks good. It's hard work, and Kate's pretty good with a shovel and a pick and lawnmower and a hedge trimmer and all the things as well. So she's a perfect gardening mate to have as well.
And the perfect, I imagine, with all of her qualifications. Could you get a better koi partner?
Probably not. Probably not, no. As I say, as some of my friends have said, you've hit a grand champion there with Kate, so, yeah, no, she's perfect. Yeah.
Kate, what do you get out of this fish judging and fish keeping?
It's a complete fascination. Quite magical in the way the colours work together. The colours and the quality, that for me is just unbelievable. If I go to a show and see just one fish that is really out of the box and absolutely special, that is an amazing experience. And I tend to get that every show I go to. There's just something there that is just so special, and you can just look at it and look at it and you think, why does that look like that? Why does it make such an incredible impression? It seems to be a combination of all the appreciation points put together, and you end up with something that is so much more than the dissected sections. It's just that to me, it's magical. And I get this experience from koi a lot. I mean, I can look at the koi just in here and think, oh, you are just so special. And it is, it's amazing. You know, there's one just, I can't see it just at the minute, but we have a beautiful, that's called a Shirawat Zuri in here, which is a white koi with some black markings on. And she has some of the bright Ginrin scaling as well. But the white is so vibrant. It's snow white. It's perfect. And beautiful black markings on her, just a few. It's just so special. You know, you just look at a fish like that and you think, you know, you are just gorgeous.
That fish looks like newly fallen snow.
Yeah, exactly.
The iridescence, the light shining through the flakes. Yeah.
That's what I get out of this. It's an artistic experience, really.
How has your appreciation of these fish changed your life?
Well, it's changed my entire life. It's brought me to Australia, as far as that goes. I mean, that's how I actually came here in the first place. In 2005, very, very sadly, my husband passed away and I was on my own. And a year later, Ian contacted me to come and judge the show out here. And we've sort of got together. So it was pretty magical. So, I mean, without my koi appreciation and judging hobby, we would have never have met.
And how quickly did you make the jump to come to Australia?
Within that year. By the end of 2006, I was here. But I was very, very fortunate to find an excellent job in St Vincent's Hospital. I couldn't have come without that. I needed sponsoring. Too old. So.
What part do you think the fish play in your relationship?
Difficult to say. I mean, we have a lot in common beside the koi, which is wonderful. You know, it really is wonderful. But as I say, the koi brought us together, and that's very, very special, and we'll always remember that.
Having these fish together, do you ever have koi-related fights? I have to ask.
Oh,
absolutely. I'm sorry.
Oh, quite often, Ian. So Ian tells me, you haven't a clue how to judge young fish. You're always picking the wrong ones. And I'll tell him a koi's butt's absolute rubbish and what on earth did he bring it home for? Yeah, we have lots of spats like that.
How do you see these fish? Do you see these fish as wild and you're a caretaker? Or are they pets? What are they?
They're pets. They're definitely pets. Yeah, although they don't, strictly speaking, have personalities as such, they are different. The way they respond to you is different between the different fish. I say some are tamer than others, but no, the bottom line, these fish are pets. They're definitely not wild. They really would not survive well outside this environment.
Have you ever seen the fish that these fish came from genetically in their native environment in Japan?
No. I haven't.
Is that something that interests you?
Not particularly. Common carp are very boring, to be honest. They're just green things. Green or brown. I mean, I've seen them cut up for sushi in Japan.
Don't say that too loudly.
Nice.
They'll hear that you've eaten their cousin.
Oh, these are far too expensive to eat.
Well, yes, I imagine so.
I think perhaps one of the greatest things the hobby did for me was totally overcoming my fear of public speaking. Because if someone had said to me when I was in my 20s that I would be up in front of 200-300 people happily talking about fish, I'd have died on the spot, quite literally, because I was very shy. But having being with the fish, learning to love the people that go with them, and learning so much about them, I quite happily spout forth to however many people happen to be in front of me, because I love it, and the passion is so great. I love to share it.
But you've also, it has changed your experience of the world, because perhaps without the fish you might not have travelled to all of the amazing places.
I definitely wouldn't have, no. No, I probably wouldn't have. No, I mean, it's changed my life.
How a very special type of goldfish can change your life. Kate and Ian are creating a koi haven in their backyard, an idyllic environment for the fish and for themselves, a place where the fantastical underwater world and suburban Sydney will intersect and give them immense joy. Of course, I've put up some photos of the fish on the off-track section of the RN website, and you can find them by going to abc.net.au/RN and then following the prompts. My name's Anne Jones, and I'm off to clean out my filters now, but I'll be back next week when I'll take you somewhere else.